kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. No Cole this episode. She's busy painting cabinets, so instead we've got a party cast going on. We've got Chris Taylor. We've got Tim Ekibis. We've got Pernell Vaughn. How's everybody doing?
Without Cole, we can have a party.
Yes.
That way, it's like, without Cole here, now it's an actual party.
Yeah, now that she's gone.
She's going to come back, slam dance all over us. Watch.
I'm going to go on record as saying I miss Cole.
I know.
She's the glue that holds this show together.
She's the holla. I just had to say
she's that. The sweet honey butter that holds this show together.
Yeah. I get
the rest of us are.
She's like, this isn't Ori. You're not playing Ori, Pernell. You're not playing Ori. And if it was anyone else, I'd be like, I can't stand this. But when it's Cole, I'm like, I like that. I appreciate that. I'm going to play it eventually just for her.
I love that she's infested your Facebook posts.
It's great. It doesn't even have to be really like Labulana related anymore. It can be any game. We're talking about playing Scrabble. That's not Ori, Pernell. Scrabble's a board game. Well, put the board down. Boot up Ori. Shit. But yeah, it's definitely something appreciated. But I got to say, it's been some bad luck this week too. I feel like every system I have, except for the PS4, which is only a matter of time at this point, is going down, you know, having issues that I need to remedy. And it sucks balls. I don't like it.
Like, I don't know what happened.
So the Xbox, you might have experienced this before yourself, but the power supply cube, the fan inside was starting, I guess the fan started just going freaking like buzzsaw noisy to the point where like I didn't want to leave it plugged in anymore. So wow. I don't leave the system plugged in. I did buy a replacement. It'll be here soon. It's like one that was like apparently rated well enough online. It's not a Microsoft branded one, but it's rated well enough where it seemed like it'll be good. So I bought that to replace the brick, and then I'll swap it out. But in the meantime, I don't leave it plugged in when I go to bed anymore. The Switch, the back panel cracked in a corner, which I was like, oh, that's not so bad. It's cosmetic, but it's annoying. But now
it annoys you. It gets to you. It will dig into your brain.
It is. And it got a little worse, too. Like, I remember you commented on my Facebook. You said you replaced your back. Before you did you also have a moment where, like, if you were to try to pop the game card tab up to put a game inside, like, the whole damn thing wants to push back now, like, the whole back panel? Like, it's just not flush anymore. Like, I need to screw it down harder or something.
Oh, that's weird. Yeah, no, mine didn't do that. It was just... there was just a piece, and I was just like, at first I was like, I can live with that. And then after a while, my fingers kept grazing over it. I was like, all right, how much is a fucking back plate? I'll replace that shit. And then I started thinking about replacing the whole thing. And then after I got the back off, I was looking at it. I was like, no, that's way more of a pain in the ass than I want to deal with. So I'll just replace the back. And now the Switch logo is like wearing off because it's like cheaper paint or whatever.
That's beautiful.
I still have my original back sitting around just for, I don't know, purposes. It's around. I can't imagine why I would need it at this point.
For purposes.
But, yeah, well, it's like if I needed it for, like, warranty or whatever, but, I mean, I've violated that, so, you know.
And it's you made it sound so sinister, like Mr. Sinister, who just dropped 19 bits in chat and also subbed to us for his third month.
Wow. That was
I know. And I also got a shout out to Vertically Impaired, who subbed for 26 months. How crazy is that?
I appreciate that you accepted that you had no segue for that one. It's like also him.
That is incredibly crazy. Now 26 months. That's over 2 years.
Awesome Prime literally just subbed for his fifth month. He says 5 months, bitchin'.
Thank you.
So thank you, Prime. Yeah.
Like sub kitchen. 6 months and we'll talk about sketchy. Damn it, Chris!
Wow.
You beat me to it.
Sketching in the kitchen.
Well, we all remember that ad, right?
Which one?
Skitchen, the ad for Skitchen on the Genesis.
I remember the game, but I don't remember the ad.
Oh, it was just an ad that it said, like, I'll have to find an image of it or something, but it's like, riding, hitching, bitching.
Which was Skitchen. 90s, it, all over very there. 90s.
And, it is very 90s.
And when my mom saw that in my copy of Sega Visions as a kid, she made me tear it out. She didn't like it.
That's language.
Yeah, exactly.
That is terrible.
In the 80s, it was Garbage Pail Kids. In the 90s, it was Sega Visions.
Drop it, bitch!
Looking back all that stuff, man, like the stuff that our parents had issues with compared to like what kids get now, is like, I can't even fathom it. Like, again, like, Garbage Pail Kids caused so much of a stir that they were on TV news. They were being banned at stores and in schools. And like you mentioned just now, your mom threw a little because I'm adding your mom game and said bitching. And now every kid's game is pretty much cursing in it. Yeah. Just swearing all over the damn place.
Well, they're either just like, you know, complete bubblegum or like just, you know, just a huge mess of like stuff that I don't even like. And, you know, I'm 37. Yeah. And I'm like, this is a little too much.
Oh, Mr. Sinister in chat is asking where Cole is. She's not with us this week, unfortunately. She's painting cabinets. They're remodeling the kitchen, and she got new cabinets that she's painting. And the show is canceled.
Without Cole, what are we doing?
Pretty much.
I love that. Cole's good stuff.
She's good people.
I can imagine that, like, Cole's like, I gotta take a hiatus. And she's like, well, we need to get like a voice recording set up of Cole, just like push a buttons, like, you know what you're talking about, Joe? But fuck, it's like she's still here.
Snapper. Oil. Fire.
Oh, man.
I'll just have like a keychain with sound clips. It'll be like fire, 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 fire. Mr. Sinister dropping more biddies, dropped another 9, and then before that was another 12. So dropping all the biddies tonight. That's a lot of biddies.
I think we just established that it's Colestalgia is what's causing that. Colestalgia. Every time we get Colestalgia, it's like, what? Well, there's some biddies. There's some biddies.
Colestalgia.
It's like, dang.
Man, Cole, that'd be great if she listened to this episode and heard us talking about her.
You'll just have to slip a postcard to the door at her house. Like, listen to this episode. There's a clue that will lead you to good fortune.
No, there isn't. There's nothing. You get absolutely nothing out of this show.
Hey, Cole, if you're listening to this right now, Home Depot's got a really cool sale on primer. You can use it on your cabinets. Use the following code, GQW6X, on the website at checkout. There you go. There's your...
This is
I hope that's a real coupon code, too.
It would be awesome if it was.
Somebody check Retail Me Not.
No, that would be the best. Like, it worked like I'm a coupon seer.
That'll be a new segment to our show. We'll just randomly feature coupons from...
Coupon Whisper. I was told to see you because I'm in dire need of a new Switch, but we can't afford $300. Leave it to me. Zum bum bum. 55 Beta 6 at Target on Tuesday the 7th. You will find good fortune in your Switch at a discount. Thank you, Coupon Seer.
Wet pancakes!
Oh, see, now I want that to be real. That could be a Fox show. We could only, I could only come up with 3 episodes for it, which would be just about time until Fox cancels it, so I think it works.
Oh, Jesus.
So
what's everyone up to? Tim, what are you up to? You've been kind of quiet.
Oh, me? Like, right now, what have I been doing? I pulled some soundtracks down from upstairs, the disc that came with the Persona 5 Royal Limited Edition, and the mini soundtrack that came with the Final Fantasy 7 Remake, are getting prepared to be ripped and digitized.
Nice. Where they'll
be placed back in their boxes and then forgotten about for a extended duration of time. Oh, I mean, I'm teepee. I finished the Final Fantasy VII Remake last night, actually.
Did you? What'd you think of it?
Yeah, I did. I really loved it. I loved it quite a bit. There are some surprising twists and turns in that game.
Did you love it as much as Mr. Sinister loves dropping biddies?
Is there such a thing?
yeah. We got 8 more biddies. Another 8 biddies. I didn't think so. They keep coming.
I gave no bits to the remake. I don't know if that's possible. I didn't have the correct coupon code to throw bits at Final Fantasy VII remake. But yeah, as somebody who like played Final Fantasy VII at the time, and was like, yeah, this is pretty great, and then went on with my life and didn't play it again. And you know, I feel like that game aged pretty poorly. The original kind of looks like garbage.
I can agree there.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, sure, you know, remake. Yeah, it's not my favorite Final Fantasy. Like, besides that, it wouldn't be like a top 5 Final Fantasy for me. Like, I don't want to rag on it or anything, but yeah, that's just kind of where it is. But I was like, ah, you know, this remake. But yeah, like, I feel like, I mean, one, the game looks incredible. It looks amazing. It sounds amazing. And, you know, I thought it was kind of, there is some absurdity to, like, okay, well, the Midgar section of the first game was, like, what, maybe less than 10 hours, let's say. You know, depending on how much dicking around, you know, that probably less than that. And then, but this is a full 40-hour game, so you'd think it would feel fluffed out and dragged out, but I really didn't think so. I did not feel like that it was padded to make a full release at all, and you know, it was more time to flesh out the characters. I actually kind of give a shit about Aerith at this point, which is wild because I never did in the original. Like, just like all of them, like Cloud and Tifa and Barret, and even like Wedge and Biggs and Jesse get like so much more screen time and, you know, more character moments. It's great. The combat system was a lot of fun. And yeah, like I said, I knew going in, like, I'd kind of heard, like, oh, yeah, they changed some stuff. And that's pretty apparent, like, you know, as you go in the game. And just like, oh, okay, yeah, they added some sections. There's, like, these side quests and stuff in the slums to do. There's extra missions. Like, you go to Jesse's mom's house at one point when you're on a mission. She makes pizza. So, yes.
Oh, yeah.
There's, like, a bike chase sequence earlier on in the game with a new character. So I was like, oh, okay, they added some stuff. But yeah, I don't want to talk too much about it yet, but by the end of it, like, they've it is, you know, you go through the Shinra Tower, and then you do go through the, you know, the bike sequence, and there's a little bit more going on there that is, to me, surprising and exciting, and to some people is going to be infuriating and confusing.
That's kind of what bugs me a little bit too, though, because I bought Remake because, well, Remake, I was like, well, gotta have it just in case, you know, but I wasn't really excited for, like,
just in case what, there's a flood.
Yeah, you never know. I might need like, crap, your boat's sinking, you only have enough, the hole's the size of a PS4 game case. You gotta fill that shit. But I was just more like, you know, that thought of, like, I have a feeling I'll at least enjoy it a bit. I want to be able to talk about it with people eventually, you know, that kind of thing. But I wasn't jazzed for it because in the end, I played Final Fantasy VII. Like you said, it wasn't my favorite, so I wasn't itching to go back. But then I heard people say, like, what you just said, which is they changed enough that it'll feel there's new stuff and even new, like, story bits they throw in there. Like, hey, what? It's almost like a retelling of this game with some twists and turns. So I was all ready for that. And then, like, I read an interview or an article where they were claiming that Nomura was like, the next game is going to be pretty much just like the previous one, the previous game, like the old Final Fantasy. I was like, I don't want that. Fuck that. No, I don't want that. Like, for example, I'm one of the few people who wants this to be some kind of weird twist where either A, Aerith doesn't die somehow, or they do fan service and they come up with something that kind of gives us nostalgia for all those ridiculous cheats and stuff that they had in old magazines. Like, if you go fight the 5 wise men underneath the spring, you can resurrect Aerith and she can come with you. You know, like, yeah, I want something like that. I want them to make it so I can feel like I'm not just retelling the same game I've played many times. I want to feel like it's something new.
Yeah. I will say two things. One is that the next part of the remake, whenever, you know, of course the joke is like, yeah, in 2032, when the next part of the remake comes out, ha ha ha. But I'd hope that now that they have like the tech and engine behind it, like it will not take that long for it to hit. Yeah, when that that it is going to, I think, diverge more than this one did. And I will say I got a feeling early on playing this game that they are going to go in a direction in which Aerith doesn't die. I don't know if that's the case, because obviously that doesn't fucking happen in this game, so who would know? Like, it does not happen in the Midgar portion, but I started to get a sense early on that, like, something different was going to happen with that moment in particular, and the way things are set up. Holy shit!
Clearly that cat wants Aerith to die!
Cats are going at it over here, holy shit!
It's like, Aerith might not die. Fuck that shit!
Those cats are like, spoilers.
Fuck your opinion.
They could go in a direction where that you know, significant moment in gaming history does not take place. And, but I, you know, I don't know. We'll see. But I will say the door seems to be open.
And that's what I'm hoping.
Yeah,
like that. Honestly, that's the stuff that would make me boot it up. Like, and actually, say this, this done. So
you should boot it up. You should check it out before stuff starts like getting out there. You know,
that's a good point because it's probably already out there, and I'm just lucky enough to be avoiding it so far. But that shit doesn't last forever.
I have mine installed. I have it ready to play. I just haven't had the desire or drive to fire up my PS4. And thanks again, Mr. Sinister, who's been dropping so many bits, I can't even keep up over here. But
how many dollar bills on
it's like podcast. 7, 5, 5, 3, 5, 10, 8.
It's just a coupon keep code.
It's a coupon code.
Maybe it's Morse code for a coupon code.
I was like, maybe the secret is he's just trying to break your like segue like meter. Like, speaking of donut recipes, Mr. Sinister.
Yeah, so I finished that, and then I'm in like finished a big game Limbo where I don't know what to do with myself. Like I spent
Limbo like the old black and white game with the kid.
No, not like that. It's just like, oh, I don't know what to do. I don't have anything to play, and it's like, yeah, except for the other hundreds of games that I haven't touched yet. But I just stared at the walls a bit tonight, and then I ended up playing more Streets of Rage 4.
Mr. Sinister saying, oh, hell no, you better not talk about the PS4. I don't like the DualShock. The ridge on the back bites into my finger, and the symmetrical analog sticks are dumb. Let me use my Xbox controller on a PS4, and I'm fine.
I'll tell you this. My only thought to that, and that being the reason that I play something, is, well, looking back on retro consoles in the present, I don't like the Nintendo Bone. I don't like... I'm not a big fan of the SNES controller. Going back, John Haynes. What happened? Oh, okay, so that's it. It was like, it's mostly because of how my hands feel with them now. Like, as a kid, I'm sure the NES controller didn't bother me at all because my hands were smaller. Now I hold one, it fucking hurts. A lot of those older controllers were like that for me because my hands grew and the controllers are smaller, you know? But with that said, if someone's like, hey, Purnell, you want to play Kirby's Dream Course with me on a classic SNES? Like, give me that damn fishbone or whatever. I want to play. And I just make do, you know? Like, it doesn't have to be the favorite controller. As long as it's a functional controller, that's enough.
There's a market out there for, like, retro controllers for big meaty hands.
I would be all in on that shit. Like, remember when the 3DS first came out? Not the 3DS XL, but the original 3DS. And it was smaller than the normal DS. And people all around were like, correct, like, my hands are getting cramped holding this thing. It's too damn small. And I was definitely one of those people, like, playing the 3DS fucking hurt. Like, I could play a game for like an hour or two, like, I'm done. This thing hurts now. Didn't stop me from playing that shit. I want to play some games. Just break this thing out. Take a break. That's all it meant to me. Like, take more breaks. But it sucks, but not enough to stop playing it entirely. just enough to be like, well, I prefer the Xbox controller, but right now I want to play some fucking Final Fantasy VII, so I can do it for an hour or two. But damn, shit.
For PS4, my solution was to get an Astro C40 controller. The thing's amazing. And you can customize the sticks however you want them. And I set them like a Switch Pro controller, sweet, which is also an Xbox controller.
How much do those run?
Like $200.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
All right, Mr. Sarah, just start dropping some biddies.
I can't really speak that badly about spending a lot for a controller, considering I have an Elite controller.
Serious.
But
yeah,
I don't want to spend that much on a PlayStation controller.
Oh. Well, it is also a Steam controller.
That works, too. Yeah, that'll be my next purchase after a PC.
I love this controller. I definitely endorse it.
And what is it again?
Astro C40. It's the only, I think it's one of the only, like, no, no, it's not explosive, I don't think. But I haven't tested that.
I got your joke, Purnell. It's okay.
No, I got it.
C40. I try.
Oh, my Lord. Anyway, we could talk about which console controller is better all we want, but the only thing that matters is that they could play good.
Mr. Yes. Sinister dropping biddies.
I was going to say, all that matters is the games, like the ones we have to review.
Oh, yeah.
Twisting our arms. Oh, my God. I'm thinking about it. That's gonna be, how many times can he make that comment? Speaking of playing a game, playing games with the biddies.
Speaking of discs.
Definitely trying to segue us into reviews.
I was. But if you guys don't want to, I really don't care. No one's here to keep us on track. I don't give a shit. You guys do what you want. I'm going to sit back and just relax for
I tried to prop it up for you earlier when I was playing Streets of Rage 4.
See if we can get Christian Schaal on the line. Have her impersonate Cole and get us back on track.
Just talk about dicks a lot.
Yeah. Sir Dicks a
lot. Sir Dicks a lot.
Anyways.
I like Streets of Rage and I can't not lie.
One of us can't deny that Blaze is the best character to pick is because she kicks that ass and gets stupid. What?
Okay, let's never do that again. Instead, let's talk about games. Because the first game to talk about tonight is called Streets of Rage 4, developed by Dotemu, Lizard Cube, and Guard Crush Games, published by Dotemu, released April 30th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $24.99, also available on Xbox Game Pass. Amongst the best beat-em-up series ever created, jammin' 90s beats and over-the-top street beating, the iconic Streets of Rage comes back with a masterful tribute to and revitalization of the classic action fans adore. Tim, tell us about Streets of Rage 4.
Nah. Yeah, okay.
I mean, I built it up. You kind of have to now.
I guess, yeah. All right, yeah, hey, Streets of Rage 4. Have any other guys played it yet?
Yes.
I played a little bit of it because thanks to Game Pass, honestly, because otherwise I'd be waiting on LRG shit.
That was totally a
Game Pass.
That was totally a trying to look at your classmates like answers type move right there.
Streets of Rage 4. I
like
Stage 5.
I like to know, you know, if anyone else has played it and welcome you to contribute as I speak on the game. I have my opinion. I already wrote it down. I'm not changing it. I'll scan the page if you want.
I also like Stage 2 the best. How'd you know?
Anyways, yeah, so Streets of Rage 2 is one of my favorite games of all time, and one of my soundtracks of all time, so I am as it goes back on this podcast, I talk about my love of beat-em-ups a lot, and I have reviewed many a beat-em-up over the years, so I got some history. So, Streets of Rage 4, I think it's a pretty nice-looking game overall. The characters look really nice. They got some really great, smooth animation on them. The backgrounds are super detailed. Something I picked up more on when I was playing it today is just like the lighting effects on your characters, I think, are really good, which makes the game, I think that's what really makes the game look better than just like kind of like, okay, well, here's your cell characters on the screen, and it looks like a little too bright or a little too flash gamey, as people like to say when they see these, like, really, I don't know, sharp cut, colorful character sprites or cells or whatever. So I think there's no denying, like, the game looks great. You have five main playable characters. One of them doesn't unlock till you get a few stages into the story. That's Adam from the first game. I don't think that's a spoiler. He's there. He's in it. So you have five main playable characters, and there are 12 unlockable characters. Classic characters. Yeah. Well, so when I say five main playable characters, like, those are characters that are made in the Streets of Rage 4, like, art style, and have the full complement of the moveset. The unlockable characters are the classic characters from Streets of Rage 1 through 3. Like, literally, they are fucking pixelated sprites ripped out of those games. I mean, probably not directly ripped out of those games, but perhaps lovingly recreated in some cases so that they actually scale up properly for the resolution of this game. But yeah, your first unlock is pixel ass Axel Stone from Streets of Rage 1.
That's beautiful.
And he does not have the full complement of the moveset. He just has the moves he had in Streets of Rage 1, and that's it. And then once you unlock the Streets of Rage 1 characters, you start unlocking the Streets of Rage 2 characters. And those characters did have special moves. So that they play a little bit more into everything that this game has to offer. But those get unlocked as you earn points. That's drop just like bits. Fun gravy bonus stuff. Really, it's cool that they went that far in dropping all those characters in there and making them work in the game is really impressive. Oh yeah, and obviously after Streets of Rage 2, you start unlocking Streets of Rage 3 characters, though you can't get the kangaroo.
I was sitting here waiting to ask that question.
Yeah, no, that's the only one. That's the only character.
I don't understand why that is.
He has a cameo in one of the levels.
Yeah, I think it's because you couldn't select him in one of the other games. You, like, had to get him through a combination of things.
You had to beat him up. You had to beat up his trainer.
Yeah. Trainer, quote unquote.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, but you have your five.
You know what you can get, though? You can get over 100 biddies from Mr. Sinister.
Jesus Christ.
Dropped 100, dropped 9, dropped 5, dropped 14. I can't keep up with the biddies, Mr. Sinister.
You know, you can't unlock a Streets of Rage 4, Mr. Sinister. Jeez.
23 like more just now.
It's like we're having a meeting and Mr. Sinister is like some kind of spandex supervillain that, like, flies by and throws pennies at us.
Clean.
I'm imagining Mr. Sinister from the X-Men, except he's flying around like the King of All Cosmos and animated as such.
Yes.
And with a record scratch voice. Anyway, Streets of Rage 4. So your five main playable characters have a pretty expansive moveset. You have your standard combos. You get back attacks. You have grabs with strike attacks while you're grabbing them. You have throws. You can still vault over top of characters. Like, if you're in front of them, you can vault behind them and throw them that way. You have charge moves. You can charge up a strong attack, which is cool because you can charge it at any time. I realized that, like, you can charge it, like, in the middle of a throw animation. Like, you can hold down the button and your character will do this yellow flash when it's charged and ready to go, which gives you some interesting possibilities. I literally just figured that out before I got on the podcast, so I haven't really messed around with it yet. Each of the new characters has three specials: a defensive special, a offensive special, and an air special. And the way those work in the old games, and kind of in, like, classic beat 'em up history, when you used your special attack, it came at the cost of some of your life. Just straight up, like, okay, you're in trouble. You use this special attack, it will clear the area around you. And
Mr. Sinister's special attack is dropping bits.
Dropping biddies.
Biddy Buster.
in this case, it does decrease your life bar a little bit, but some of that remains green. And if you start
50,
Jesus Christ, I'm never going to get this through this review because of Mr. fucking Sinister.
He's earning his name.
Disrupting the whole show.
I'm just going to say random numbers when he drops bits. I'll just say random number. It'd be like 23. Start
talking faster. I'll never get to bed.
40 trillion.
Oh my God. So yeah, you will use, you use the special, it will cost you some health, but then you have the opportunity if you start just start writing them down and then we can just rattle them up. And once you go back to hitting enemies in the face, you will gradually restore that health unless you get hit before you finish restoring it. In that case, you just lose it and it goes wah wah. And you have super moves, like big screen clearing super moves that are tied to stars that they, you start off each level with a star or the star. And then you can find stars. It will dish out like one or two more, maybe hidden in a level in barrels and crates and shit. So your character's got a lot of moves at their disposal. And it definitely, like, you can air combo, juggle, bounce guys off the walls. There's a lot of depth to each character. The characters, for the record, you do have Axel and Blaze. Axel Blaze sounds like a name, but that's two different people. Cherry is this little girl with a guitar, who's really fast, kind of fills the skate role of this game. She's a small, fast character, though when you smash people with a guitar, that is a much heavier attack. Though she has an air attack where she bounces off of people's heads, which is fun to combo with. And then Floyd is the dude who looks like Jax, huge guy with big metal arms. So he's kind of your heavy character for this game.
Yeah, it's totally Jax, and no one's going to convince me otherwise. It's a guest character.
Jax. Yeah. And then there's Adam as well. Yeah. The aforementioned.
My computer is running so poorly now because of how many bits are dropping on screen right now. We have 19, 25, 43, 18, 22, 21, and just did another 16. So thank you, Mr. Sinister, for the oodles obitties.
The bit shower. So you get a lot of tools at your disposal, and as, like, the more I'm having a lot of fun with it. Like, the more I play, the more fun I'm having with it. I will admit my, like, initial impression of the game, like, the first time I played through it, which, admittedly, I was playing through on easy alongside my child, so I was just kind of getting, like, the most basic overview of, like, checking out the characters and kind of, like, messing around with levels. But as I've been playing through more on normal by myself, like, I'm getting more the hang of how to do combos and, like, really make a character moveset work for me, and it's pretty damn good. And all that stuff, you know, is available right off the bat. You don't have to unlock anything. There's no shops in this game like River City. You just have this stuff. You get a story mode is 12 stages long. Some are longer than others. Once you beat that, you unlock the arcade mode, battle mode's unlocked. Anyways, battle mode is like a versus mode. You unlock the boss rush. And stage select, that's the other thing you unlock after you beat it. Sometimes, because on two occasions, after having completed the story mode, I had to go back and finish chapter 12 again to unlock everything for some reason. I wouldn't have mentioned it, but like the first time one of our controllers disconnected for some reason and the game like was like just being dumb, I had to quit back to the main menu to kind of get things straightened out. I was like, okay, well, it disconnected right after we beat the level. Okay, we'll just do it again real quick. But then I sat down tonight to like play some arcade mode and it was locked again. And I'm like, why? I've beaten the game for sure. And like watched through the credits. Weird. Yeah, I don't know why exactly. That confuses me.
Were you on a different profile maybe or something?
No, it's only got my profile on there.
Were well, you I guess on Mr. Profile. Sinister's profile? Because he has dropped
33. I wasn't because I was not dropping biddies.
33, 16, 16, 21, 14, 10, 23, 11, and 10.
Hey, he is keeping it to a list.
Yeah,
I said I would keep a list, so.
Yeah, thank you. The
36.
Yeah, the way the story mode works is between each stage you get two lives, and you can just kind of retry at a stage. It does let you, if you fail, you can pick an assist for a penalty to your score, and assist will give you more stars or more lives. Arcade mode just works like, you know, an old beat 'em up would, where it's like, okay, you start the game, you have X amount of lives, go until you die. And it doesn't save, which is kind of a bummer. There's no saving. You just got to play through right then and there. Still a save wouldn't kill a man, especially. I mean, you know, systems have suspend modes, but still. Boss rush is appreciated for when you just want to, like, basically practice fighting against bosses and learning their patterns and stuff like that. The extras menu has, like, a bunch of cool art in there and stuff. There's different food options. There's vegetarian options. You can change your turkey to a big salad.
Yeah, I appreciated that. That was
nifty. I appreciate that. Yeah, and there's lots of other stuff too. Like the small food item was an apple, which is vegan, I've heard. I changed it to pizza. I like pizza. But yeah, there's a few different options, which is fun. Pizza can be vegetarian. This appeared to have pepperonis on it, though. So
could be vegan pepperoni.
Vegan pepperoni. I don't know what's on this pizza, but could be vegan, could not. Schrodinger's pizza.
I'll tell you what's on this pizza. Mr. Sinister. Sinister's
biddies. So somebody dropped biddies on this pizza.
23, 17, 19, and 20.
Yeah. I love that Purnell can't actually tell because he's not in chat, so...
But he knows.
It doesn't matter. It's I know just he's instinct. Just doing it.
Yeah.
Because there's another 14.
I have, you know, I played the Game Pass version on Xbox. I have played the Switch version. Both look good, play well. I didn't notice any, you know, hang-ups on the Switch version. Though the Switch version has an incredible feature for a Switch game in that you can actually invite people from your friends list to play the game with you.
What? Is that the first game to do that?
Nice.
It's the first one that I know of. But yeah, literally, when you create an online game, you can invite, and it will take you to your Switch friends list, and you can choose someone to invite to play with you.
And what is this crazy technology that Nintendo has thought of?
It's so dumb that this is mind-blowing in 2020.
It really is. Like, I'm actually not even sure, how do you even accept invites on a Switch?
You have to get on the other end of it and find out, man.
Oh my god.
So yeah, and the more I, you know, the more I play the game, the more I go through the levels, like, there's fun secrets and Easter eggs to find. There's, like, a lot of detail, like, throwbacks to the older games in the form of, like, characters and other references and stuff. My only beef with the game, and I know this is going to be contentious, is
vegetarian beef.
I don't think the music is very good.
No?
No. They got Yuzo Koshiro and his collaborator, whose name escapes me, to come in for a handful of guest tracks, which are good. Those are clearly the better tracks. But, like, the main composer on the game, his stuff, I'm just like, blah. It ranges from okay, like maybe slightly above okay to mostly okay to some are just like up bad. I think it was like the airplane level I was playing earlier. I was just like, this song just sucks. I just don't like it, sir. I just think it's bad. And then you get to the boss, which is one of the themes that Koshiro did, and it's like, ah, yes, this is clearly much better. Yuzo Koshiro, he did the title theme, the stage select, the first part of the first level, up till a car crashes into a wall and then some bad song starts playing.
Michael Jackson?
The villains in this game are the children of Mr. X. it is Mr. and Ms. Y, respectively. Do you see what they did there? And he did their boss battle themes, and his collaborator did a few levels in the end credits. But overall, for, you know, Streets of Rage, the Streets of Rage 2 soundtrack is freaking legendary. That is one of my favorite soundtracks of all time, video game or otherwise, because it is a banger. But most of this soundtrack, in my opinion, is pretty meh, pretty throwaway. And that is a big bummer for a beat 'em up, in my opinion. I feel like good music and a good beat 'em up go hand in hand. So while this game does seem to have like the gameplay aspect wrapped up, and you know, the visuals, I think the visuals look really good. I think they're, you know, one could debate whether, like, they're almost, like, too clean. Like, a little bit, like it should be grungier or grittier in some way to, like, really get a beat-em-up feel. But there's no denying, I think, that just, like, you look at it and it is quality. Like, you can like the style or not like the style, but it, like, they put in the work. Like, it animates well. It looks great, just whether you think it fits or not. But, yeah, the music, I'm just like, nah, bah, dah, oh.
Tim Allen?
No thanks.
All right. Well, overall, we got to get your opinion on this. $25. What do you think about Streets of Rage 4?
I think it is well worth buying, for sure. I mean, it seems like the response to this game is very, very positive. So people seem to really enjoy it, which, not gonna lie, kind of irritates me in my freaking like beat 'em up snob way, because I'm like, yeah, Streets of Rage 4, yeah, this is a good, very cool beat 'em up. But there are some other beat 'em ups out there that are very good that I have been, you know, I've been evangelizing the genre for nigh on a decade now, as people keep saying like, oh, it's just some old crappy arcade genre, it has no place in the modern gaming world. And I'm like, no man, they are still fucking fun. If you like Streets of Rage 4, you should go get River City Girls because it's better and has an amazing soundtrack. You should go check out Fight and Rage.
Yes,
it's out on Switch now, which I was playing like just, you know, the past couple weeks. I got it on sale like a month or so ago, so I've been playing that lately, and that is a hell of a beat 'em up. Yeah, Mother Russia Bleeds, even, which I played or reviewed on this podcast like a couple years back. Mm-hmm. Lots of what?
Oh, I was gonna say I throw in Ninja Saviors.
Ninja Saviors.
Yeah, the new Ninja Warriors.
Oh, that's what I thought that was.
Oh yeah, it might not be called that here. I bought the Japanese version.
Oh, mister, I bought the Japanese version.
No, it is called Saviors. It was in English.
On Switch. I'll have to check that out. I have not checked that out. I'm always looking for a good beat 'em up. So.
It's good.
Speaking of good beat 'em ups, we're overdue for a Mr. Sinister check-in.
Yes, we are. Beat 'em up with them biddies, daddy.
Let's see. The biddy count that we have 20, 14, 20, 16, 13, 20, 12, 19, 5, 10, 8, 15, 14, and 10. And a sub to Chris.
That's me.
So yeah, so you know,
thank you, Mr. Sinister, for your generosity and
what
for
about
throwing
me? I'm the one that subscribed.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate your generosity, Chris.
Yeah, go check out Streets of Rage 4, and then also go check out a bunch more great beat 'em ups that are out and about on your systems.
So it's good to hear this one was worth the wait.
Yeah, I was worried because I heard that they weren't out there at the front being like, oh yeah, we're making Streets of Rage 4 and Yuzo Koshiro is involved. They're like, oh well, maybe. They were like cagey about it, and then they're like, oh, we're getting him for some guest tracks, and I was kind of like, I don't know, guys, that might not be enough. And like, I didn't love the look of it off the bat. I was very unsure of it. So like early on, like my first time through, I was kind of like, I don't know. And then I've warmed up to it a lot more the more I've played it, and then I'm like, yeah, okay, it's pretty great, but still, play River City Girls.
Root Beer is my jam. Agrees and says River City Girls is the best.
River City Girls, that soundtrack. Mwah!
And then so Mr. Sinister dropped another 45 biddies. Oh, so God. He wanted the long wet pancakes one. So let's play it. Let's get this over and done with. Norg, take it away.
Fuck. Dropping bits!
Told you it's a long one. It's still
your
going.
Fucking face. wet pancakes.
Wet pancakes, indeed. Everyone, say it with me. Wet pancakes. One, two, wet three. Pancakes. Wet pancakes.
Shit.
Yeah, there we go. Tim, always a pleasure having you on, chatting about this stuff.
Thanks for having me.
Do you have any final words before we let you go?
No, I need to go to bed. I'm tired. I'm so sleepy.
You know,
I'm probably going to buy Ninja Saviors here after when I get my hands on my Switch again. At least it's going on the wish list for me to think about.
Have you ever beaten the Ninja Warriors game on the Super Nintendo or just the Ninja Warriors again on the arcade?
I think I did on the arcade.
Okay. I was going to say, like, it's got an infamously tough final battle, but other than that, it is one of my favorite beat-em-ups ever.
I feel like MAME had something to do with me getting through that game.
Oh, yeah, probably.
All right. Gotta love MAME. Have a good night. Watch out for the biddies.
I will have to watch out because 42 more just came dropping down.
My God. All right. Good night.
Have a good one, Tim.
The cup is like bizarre looking.
I know. The cup is, it's just poor cup. Poor cup.
Indeed. Indeed.
You know what else like the poor cups? Mr. Sinister.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Book of Demons, developed by Thing Trunk and Sonka, published by 505 Games, released April 30th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $24.99. Book of Demons is a hack and slash deck building hybrid in which you decide the length of quests, wield magic cards, and slay the armies of darkness in the old cathedral dungeons, save the terror-stricken paperverse from the clutches of the archdemon himself. Purnell, tell us about Book of Demons.
I honestly have a hard time describing this as a hack and slash game now that I've played it. That's not a slight or anything to it. It's just the descriptive was weird, but I should probably talk about it and it'll let the words explain that. So the idea behind this game is you choose from one of three different classes. The other two classes unlock really early in the game, so it's not a lot of work to do it. And then you take those characters into a dungeon that starts at the top of a cathedral and works its way down to what is essentially hell, where the king of demons exists, and you have to smite him to save the town. Now, when you're actually playing this game, though, you're progressing through corridors. Like, think of like a typical like roguelike game where they create the dungeon layout for you. Your goal is to find the treasure, kill the monsters, and find the exit to the next floor. However, the thing about this game that makes it weird, or there's a few things. One, you don't actually run around like the typical style, like running in circles and stuff like that and having full control of your character. Instead, there are a bunch of corridors that run through the place you're in. And you push the button to kind of like hop space, 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 space along the pathway. So it's always a straight line you're traveling. And as you're moving along the corridor path, typically you'll see like enemies creep out from the darkness into your field of vision because there's like a light ring around you and then there's a darkness outside of that light ring. And enemies will be occasionally coming in your path. Now, when you press the A button, your character will just start attacking them. Actually, now think about it. If you don't press anything, the game will auto-attack those characters, those enemies, but they'll attack slowly. But if you press the button quickly, you'll attack faster and you'll just attack guys. So as the warrior, for example, you don't have to aim at anybody. You're just like, mash A and just the enemy will just start getting slashed regardless of where they are in reference to you, as long as they're in that ring of light. And then when you kill them, they typically will drop money or whatever, and then you pick it up by using the right thumbstick and scrolling over like a mouse cursor and just picks it up. Sometimes there's jars lying around the dungeons where you press the X button if they're in your line of sight and you'll just smash them. And if there's money inside, same logic, you use the right thumbstick cursor to drag over and pick it up. Sometimes you'll see treasure chests down in the dungeon. Hold down the X button when it's in your field of view. It pops open. You will get money and sometimes cards. What the heck are cards in this game? Cards are everything. There are three types of cards. There are item cards where if you think of a healing potion, for example, if you have the item card for the potion equipped in your available slots, you can spend the cost of the mana to use the item. And the number of uses it has, that's not items don't use mana, it's just use count. As long as you have a number of uses, you can just pop it. So push the button, boom, drink a potion, you're good to go. Artifact cards are, think like accessories in an RPG, where if you wear the ribbing, you're immune to all status ailments. But when you equip those cards, you don't use them. They're just constantly active. But the detriment to those cards is that your mana is permanently decreased by the amount that the card costs. In order for you to equip it, if your mana was 10, the card costs 5. That means to equip that card, you only have 5 mana to use. And the last type of card is the spell card. Basically, any special actions you want to fulfill, like God Punch or Arrow Barrage or something like that, they all, again, have mana costs. You use the card, the mana gets depleted, and you wait for it to recharge, just like with the items, where you can use it again. So you'll be doing a lot of balancing between using just your normal attack, mashing the normal attack button to like attack quicker, and using those cards. Now, there's some weird variations in some cases too. Like some enemies will come in shielded, so you don't just press A on those. You have to actually push the B button to knock their shields down, then press the attack button again to actually kill them once the shields are down. There's enemies that can turn to stone and back, and when they're stone, you can't hurt them. You can only hurt them when they're not stone. And there's a lot of weird things like that where the enemies function a little differently. And you have to think on your toes for how to encounter and deal with them. There are some weirdness aspects to this game, though, too. And then I'll get into like the other major elements that make this game different, which is that evasion in combat. Remember I said earlier you mash the button, you just attack dudes or whatever. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you'll come across enemies that are ranged fighters. They fire arrows at you or something like that, or fire magic bolts. But since you're hopping and you're on the narrow walkways, there's no real dodging per se. You can hop out of the way, but you can only hop up and down the corridor. So if an enemy shoots an arrow along the corridor, you can't dodge it. You're just going to take the hit. So there's like a weird element there where you're like, hey, I don't know how I feel about this. Is this stupid? Am I thinking about this as being stupid? But I can't even feel like, you know, it's okay. I'm okay with it. It works. It's within the realm of how the game was designed. It's not like a glitch. It's just literally the game is designed as to where, depending on how the enemies are attacking you, you might be boned on taking some damage until you kill the enemies on the screen. So evasion is a little bit on the weird side. Now, that's something just I wanted to get out of the way. So when you finish a floor, you get a notification of if you found all the treasure, killed all the enemies, and how many times you died when you beat the floor. And you just kind of get a general score bonus depending on how well you did on those categories. And then after that, you're allowed to determine whether you want to keep going downward into the dungeon or if you want to back out to go back to town. Now, the dungeon aspect after this first dungeon crawl gets a little interesting because you eventually get access to something called the flex, like flexovision or flexometer. And what that is between the top of the surface, which is the town, and hell, there's like 100 floors or some crazy number of floors. But the game is designed in a way so as to allow you to try to customize the amount of time you want to spend on each run going further into the dungeon. So it might say like you want to have a small run, and a small run might say they'll approximate that takes like 6-7 minutes to complete. Like it actually gauges how long you think it will take you to do it. 7-minute game with 2 floors and maybe this many sub-bosses on it. And you say, sure, and that's your quest run right there. And the further in you get, the more you play, it starts to get smarter about how long you want to play the game, and it'll start giving you access for longer quests. Which usually means that's pretty cool. It really is. And I like the fact that it's there for casuals or for people who want to have a long haul, because you don't really get hurt by playing shorter games, but you do better by doing longer games because they gauge how much progress into the crypt you'll make, how much money you stand to make if you do the whole thing, and also, how many treasures you can potentially find. So longer runs means you'll get more of all of those things, but of course the danger ramps up too, and so on and so forth. But you could always just take it slow and steady, maybe not get as much treasure, but you'll get enough to feel okay, and it's not going to really hinder your progress. There's a nice little balance there. That's another thing worth mentioning. So as you kill monsters, you eventually will get enough experience points to level up your character. There's only 2 things you level up in this game: your amount of health and your amount of mana. There's some upgradings that will come up later, but for now, as far as leveling up goes, it's just those 2 things. You choose one. Now, the one that you did not choose goes into a cauldron. And this cauldron is something that you can access in the town by talking to the barmaid, and by spending a certain amount of money, you can get all the stuff that's inside of the cauldron. So let's say you level up 3 times, you level up your health twice and your mana once. That means now in town, you've got 2 mana and 1 health upgrade waiting for you, in addition to any other random prizes that you find in the dungeon that go right to the cauldron. You spend that money, boom, you get everything that's in the cauldron, right then and there. However, each subsequent use of the cauldron costs more money, to the point where it eventually becomes way too damn much money to use the cauldron. So there's a weird balance there of saying, is it time to use the cauldron? Is it not time to use the cauldron? Can I hold off? No, I want the stuff now. And of course, if you die while the cauldron's got stuff in it, it all goes away. So you lose it anyhow. So it really makes you try to gauge how you want to play it out. Now, this is only on like normal mode, though. If you're playing on the roguelike difficulty, which I think is kind of cool, it's in the game, that cauldron, out the window. There is no experience leveling up from the cauldron. You might get a few items here and there, but no leveling up from it. Another difference to the cauldron, to the roguelike difficulty, is that whenever you die, you don't just get respawned back in the town with your loot being left in the dungeon. Instead, you die, and you can resurrect, but it costs you money. Lots of money to resurrect. If you don't have that money, game over. Like, flat out, your game is done. And while I didn't get to the point of straight up game over, I wager that, I want to guess that if you outright lose on roguelike mode and you can't afford resurrection, your character gets wiped too. I would expect that to be the way it would work. That makes sense.
I would hope so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a scary thing, but at the same time, there's also like a weird element of pressure luck on that too, which I kind of like. I like the idea of like being like, how far can I get on this run? The stakes are high, and it makes you want to kind of balance how much you spend on your, how much you spend in town, because there's other things you'll be buying in town too. You can, well, the cards that I mentioned before, you can only equip 3 at the start of the game, but there's an old man in town where, depending on if you pay him enough, he will unlock more slots for you, so you can hold more cards at once on a run. So it increases your arsenal for combat. There's another character in the town that will allow you to upgrade cards that you have to like better versions of themselves, or recharge the item cards you have, so you can like recharge the uses that they have, like more health potions and stuff like that. And it's a, honestly, this game is, I liked it. I didn't expect to like it, not when I got the review, but I mean, once I started learning that it wasn't a traditional hack and slash, I was like, oh god, what the hell is this hopping crap going on? What makes this special? But I like it. I like the papercraft aspect. I like the fact that like the demon lord, when they scroll the map to show you how far down you go, he's in hell laughing, holding a rubber ducky. Because for some reason, Satan loves him some rubber duckies.
Yeah, I love games with humor.
Yes, and this game has the humor. It's got, I like it. It's got an aesthetic that, I mean, I'm used to seeing. It plays well. It has that, it gives you the run more run, the one more run feeling. And while it starts out seeming like it's easy, it gets hard the further down you go, because you start getting overwhelmed with enemies. You'll come across scenarios where like you'll need to run away, but an earthquake will happen and a rock will block your path. So now you got to break the rock before you can keep running, but there's enemies chasing after you. And I didn't even mention how boss, like mini bosses and stuff work, because if you fight a, you'll find bosses sometimes on these runs. And when you do find a boss, they sometimes will have 2 or more forms, like different levels to their battle. And every time you defeat a form, they'll become immune as they switch to their next phase. So you got to be kind of careful of that period, and then you have to fight them again until you can knock them all out. And of course, if you do beat them, you'll want to beat them, because running might be tough to pull off. You'll get a decent reward for defeating them as well. So it's, I like I said, it's a good game. I like the uniqueness of it. I think it's charming and fun to play. Just, I wanted to make it known, because they describe it in its own right in the description, almost like it's a Diablo-esque game.
Yeah.
Don't go and think you're going to be running around in circles, speedy as shit, knocking dudes over. No, you ain't doing it. You're going to be mashing A and B and hopping along one single single lane pathways, and it's fun. You'll still enjoy it. It's not a big deal. You'll get over it, because I did. Well, it's a fun game.
For $24.99, what do you think?
I think it is a quality buy it title. I think it will be enjoyed. Simple yet effective.
Awesome. All right, moving on. Oh, my God, I can't believe we're like an hour into the show and we've talked about 2 games.
Well, speaking of 2 hours, I mean, you know what else we talked about? Mr. Sinister.
Mr. Sinister dropping bitty. He actually dropped a couple of more. There were 10 and there were 7. I think the madness has died down though, thankfully. I think we could move on with the rest of the show. Watch now that I say that, we're going to get another rush of them, but next bring game to on. Talk about. Yeah, bring it on. we have a show to do. Don't bring it on. Well, yeah, kind of bring it on, but in moderation.
I'll talk through it.
Good, because it's your turn, because the next game to talk about is called Maiden Tower, developed by XCreate, published by Kemco, released May 1st on Xbox One and Windows 10 for $14.99. After Maiden Tower is invaded by the Arrival Empire, the mages who call it home find themselves cornered on its upper floors. This sets in motion a series of tragic events that lead to a counteroffensive being launched to take back the tower and to get revenge for the wrongs committed against them. Chris, tell us about Maiden Tower.
All right, Maiden Tower. So this is a Kemco / XCreate RPG. It is definitely so. Okay, there. The complaint about Kemco RPGs that I sometimes see levied against them is that they're very samey.
Yes.
And because they use the same exact graphics for every game and. They have always the four characters and, you know, like male protagonist and then a lady who's usually got a quirk. I actually wrote some of them down, like in Infinite Dunami, she's a robot. In Antiquia Lost, she's a slime girl. And in Journey to Crazia, she's a girl with weird ears. And this one is no different. And in fact, they kind of really went all out on this one. In this one, she's a brick wall.
What?
Yeah. So your journey starts with a flashback to 10 years ago, which actually is pretty normal. That usually happens. What was the last one? Alvastia Chronicles started with a 10 years ago flashback to seeing your parents get killed. That's two Kemco XCreate games with that exact same flashback. but our protagonist, Noah, witnesses his parents getting killed in a soldier raid on his mage town. And he is, you know, they basically, you know, they murder his entire family and then, you know, destroy the town and stuff like that. Yeah, he's upset. And he vows to kill every single soldier that ever lived, you know, every Imperial soldier. And flash forward to 10 years later. Now he's a mage with two hair colors. And that's how you know he's edgy and a cape. And he's going about his business killing soldiers. And he gets backed up against a wall. And in an, I guess, a weird act of desperation, he creates with his magic a kind of, not a golem, but like the word they use is a magicka, which is not the application of that word in any other game. But anyways, it's a living thing that is imbued with magic, and it turns out that it's part of the wall. And the wall hops out, and it's a wall with big anime eyes and lips. Like, I'm not even joking. And after she flattens one of the soldiers and befriends our hero, you know, we find out that the wall is actually a shapeshifter and can turn into a generically beautiful anime girl. And that's how she is in your party for a while, who attacks, by the way, with a big slab of wall. So I don't really understand why she is a human operating a wall, or she is a wall at some point. I don't know. And in the story, like, you know, of course, every female second protagonist, I don't know what the actual word, a subtagonist. But the female sidekick of every Kemco XCreate game, you know, always has a quirk that shows up in the storyline. And hers is that she turns into a wall and falls over if she's reacting to anything.
Oh, God. I know exactly what you mean, too, with the whole reacting.
Reacting thing, yeah. Like the As Divine Games with the girl with the whip. That was always the most awkward one to me. Yeah, Yep. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Every Kemco RPG fan knows what I'm talking about. So she has a quirk, and, you know, this one, she's actually more blindly loyal to the protagonist in than any of the others, because she was created by him and has no personality in all his memories. So, you know, no identity of her own, you know. But that's actually to the game's benefit, because the story actually delves a little more into the fact that he's so murderous and everybody like is kind of not approving of it, and like it kind
just of not him... approving.
Yeah, they don't approve of all
I don't
his
approve
murder.
Of your murder, sir.
I'm like, these murders are going too far. And
so many of them.
Yeah, like so like some of the characters are kind of there to more or less keep an eye on him, and like, you know, this blindly loyal innocent person that who is made of magic and is also a brick wall is kind of like, well, I should go along with him for everything, but I'm not even sure I like these murders. And so, meanwhile, he's like, yeah, murders. I deserve this. My parents are dead. Anyway. So, yeah, the story is nice. So that's kind of how that goes. And then, of course, you get joined by two other characters. One is a 100-plus-year-old witch who looks like a 14-year-old girl. And one is a dude who just hangs around her house, and his name is literally Gruff. his personality seems to be that he has a beard. Like, I don't know. He has a big old sword though, and that's cool. I enjoy that. So yeah, basically when it comes to these Kemco games, because we can't comment on the graphics, we've seen it before. As soon as you boot this up, you'll instantly recognize it if you've played any Kemco RPG, which by now statistically is likely. Despite the whole thing taking place in a tower, there's no outside world, right? It just floors on a tower. It still uses the same trees and the same forests and the same caves that you know, and a lava floor as well. I don't know how that works. That all the other games do. It just doesn't have an external world map. And in fact, you don't even walk from town icon to town icon. You just insta-warp from your map page, which is actually, yeah, it's pretty interesting. Funny enough, I was so not used to that I literally forgot how to go back to the base town. I was walking around this dungeon and I was like, where's the flipping exit or warp point? And then I was like, oh, I just got to push the button and it brings up a map and I just choose where to go instantly at any point.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. But that's how much these games have me trained to be like a certain way. So yeah, of course, like I said, we can't comment too much on, you know, the graphics and all that other stuff, because it's very much a Kemco X Create game. So we can talk about the mechanics. This one actually brings back, because I think we lost it for a game, this does bring back the weapon, modification, system, whereby you gain a weapon and you eat other weapons with that weapon, and that makes that weapon stronger.
Yep, weapons eating weapons.
Weapons eating weapons, we got that. We got the lottery system. Of course, the lottery system, once again, has, it seems like two, but I'm seeing like other kinds of currency, but like at least initially, I guess, it's two kinds of gambling. And of course, you gamble for better weapons, better items, and things like that. Now there's a system where, you know, and this is a familiar subsystem, where you augment the quirky, you know, secondary protagonist. And in this case, it takes you to a screen. It says modify wall, and it takes you to like what looks like an operation game on the anime eyes wall. And she has holes in the wall, and you pick up bricks in the game, and the bricks have different abilities attached to them, and you install the bricks in her body. And then, and of course, as the game progresses, you get more holes available that you can fill. And nice. It's silly. There's four on the front and four on the back. That's normal. And yeah,
I love Kemco games.
I know they're great. So some things that I do like about this one, they have simplified the ability system a little bit. It's not pages upon pages of moves anymore. It's, you know, much more simple. Elemental attacks play a huge role in it. Like if you're in a fire area and, you know, you have of course, a character who's more dedicated to water and, you know, a couple other characters get some water moves. Those will do like 5,000 points of damage versus your regular attack doing like 200 points of damage. So there's like a big thing, a big to do about like compatible attacks with different characters. There's the Vanguard, Midgard, and Rearguard system where you can place your four characters anywhere in the formation. And, you know, that will play into your strategy as well. There's also certain things like summoning little golem-like things that kind of assist you in battle. And those are like temporary helpers that can't be healed. And, you know, once they're killed, they're killed. But they can be summoned like, you know, within parameters, like once a battle or something, like once every 20 turns. You know, they have different things like that. And yeah. Those kind of help you out, and you can use those to your strategy as well. And it also has a cool system whereby, like, you know, while most people would rely mostly on the skills and magic attacks, which is usually the way these games go, there actually is some value to actually, you know, throwing down hands and, you know, straight up attacking the enemy, because randomly other characters will join you in your regular attack. And so you could get up to four extra hits on an enemy.
That's cool.
Yeah, so it's actually much more interesting to play with the combat. I actually found that pretty nice. Music's gotten... I like the soundtracks to all of these games. It's always hard to tell when the game music has had an upgrade, because I really think it's kind of... They again, sound good but samey. Yeah. But I just will say I really liked the battle themes in this one. They're more proggy now, and I'm really digging that. Not that I didn't like the metal stuff either, but yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's quality all around. Oh, and I do need to talk about the cauldron system. And there's also an award system now where it's kind of like Nook points, I guess. You get more gambling money if you can do various tasks like summon 10 golems, synthesize one weapon, use 3 herb items, and you know, it keeps track of those on a handy wall. Anyways, so yeah, there's different cauldron rooms as well, and you can throw regular ass items in them and either duplicate them or have them strengthened. That's something that features in one of the Asdivine games, I believe. So that kind of makes a thing here. So you get some real time like rewards for you know, kind of sacrificing a couple of items, and so that's kind of nice. And yeah, apart from that, it is a Chemco X Create game. It's good quality, good direction, and I quite enjoy it.
$15, your verdict?
I always say buy it. If you are a fan of RPGs that feel a little old, but you look a little new, and this one, I think I like the story on this one more than I have been liking like the Asdivine games and things like that. So I'm more interested in where this one's going. So yeah, I definitely say that this is a good entry in the ever-growing series of Chemco X Create RPGs.
Awesome. I picked this one up myself already, so I am eager to dive into it.
Right on. Well, let me know what you think of the Wall Girl.
I have a feeling I'm going to enjoy Wall Girl.
Oh, by the way, I just wanted to mention right quick. So the game, you know, all the characters have default names, right? Noah, the little girl is Mia, and Gruff. But if you decide to change their names, instead of giving you the ability to just give them straight up names, it's kind of like the Earthbound system where it just chooses another from a pool of names.
Oh, that's cool.
And they all have the same pool of names, and the last name on each pool is Chemco in all caps. So I don't know what the Wall Girl's default name is, because I named her Chemco.
Nice.
And it's nice for people to be talking to Chemco.
Hey, that is how their company is, all caps.
Exactly.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Slayin 2, developed by Pixel Liquor, published by FDG Entertainment, releasing May 7th on the Switch for $11.99. Engage endless hordes of monsters up close as a valiant knight, or shower them with arrows, bombs, and spells using 8 unlockable heroes with completely different skill sets and play styles. Face the forces of darkness alone, or team up with a friend in local co-op with a drop-in multiplayer feature. Purnell, tell us about Slayin 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
Yes.
He had to.
Had to.
for those that every once in a while I have a penchant for naming a game that's very similar to this, just to give people who are familiar with that game a leg up. That game this time is called Curses and Chaos. If you are familiar with Curses and Chaos, which I remember existing on Vita and PS4, then you are already in a pretty good spot for being really curious about or really interested in this game. For those who don't know about that, the primary style of the gameplay in this is that you're typically on a static screen, the static screen having a foreground and a background that you can walk along. And the goal there is to kill as many of the, I guess, repeatedly spawning enemies that are as possible while the clock is running. And then once the clock is completed, beating the boss of that stage. And you attack them by bumping into them. There's no attack button in that regard. So, see an enemy, walk up to it, boom, you hit it. If you kill him, you run right through where he was. And if you don't kill him, you kind of bounce back, but you did damage to him also. And as you kill enemies, they will drop money or the occasional power-up. The money is for points, and the power-up is for occasional things like higher defense or higher attack or invincibility or sometimes even food, with one other power-up being a key that if you collect the key, you hold on to it until eventually a treasure chest that's locked shows up on the screen. You walk over, unlock with the key, and get showered in rewards, being money and also food for health. Again, there's no attack button for the basic attack. However, there are two, I guess they're called like shining attacks. I don't know. Basically, it's like a spark. There goes spark attacks. One being done on the ground and the other being done in the air. As you kill enemies, you'll increase a spark gauge. Whenever that gauge hits over another, fills up a segment on the spark bar, you can perform that spark attack. And you'll be using that kind of frequently because you'll be using, expending, regaining, and using again very quickly. So there's no point in hoarding spark attacks. Get them out while you can get them out. At the end of a level, you will be gauged by how well you did, whether it be how your highest combo being the smash combo or slay combo. That's basically hitting enemies consistently without letting the smash the slay gauge. I keep wanting to say smash instead of slay, without letting the slay gauge go deplete to zero. And as you level up through the points you get from that combo and beating the stage and not taking damage or what have you, you increase your fame gauge. When the fame gauge maxes out at certain intervals, you'll level up. And leveling up basically just gives you more hit points. Nothing else. Now, there's also a town in the game where when you go to that town, again, two planes, forward and back, you can walk around and talk to different townspeople and eventually you start purchasing repairs to buildings of the town because they were all recently destroyed by villains or whatever. You can pay money to rebuild those facilities, and when you do so, you gain access to them. One person sells you items, for example, which you can equip when you go into a stage. Another person lets you upgrade your weapons, basically lets you buy new weapons if he's got them available. And when you buy a new weapon, you can spend additional money to upgrade it a little bit more. What makes weapons different? I should mention that too. Weapons, weapons in this game aren't like you would expect from like a usual game of this style. Like there's no numeric rating of how many damage points it'll give you or anything like that. If it is, it's a secret number. However, what it does tell you is a percentage increase, like 10% here, 20% there for defense, 10% for luck, whatever. And each weapon you can buy has percentage for increase on these stats. In addition to that, each weapon has two spark attacks attributed to it, one ground attack and one air attack, like I mentioned before. So the weapon makes all the difference. And you can also purchase upgrades to those things, like maybe a upgrade that will turn one of the attacks into like something a little different, like it'll augment it a bit. Or you can purchase to make it so that your spark gauge increases faster or your combo gauge decreases slower. So you'll be spending money on that. You'll be spending a lot of money on a lot of things, essentially. So just get ready for that. Now, every once in a while, you'll unlock a new character that you can control. And when you unlock new characters, it's just basically new weapons you can purchase, which in turn leads to new spark attacks and new upgrades for those weapons. But aside from that, the characters kind of play the same way, because even the range attackers still walk into bumping into enemies for their basic attack. They still got to bump into dudes, but then their spark attacks are probably more meant for like distance fighting. So there's the primary mode of the game is going from node to node on a world map, fighting these individual battles and then going to town and whatever. There's also an arcade mode, though, where it's more like an endless wave where you just be going from round to round, defeating enemies, holding out as long as you can until eventually you just plot. And when you plot, game over, try again. And honestly, there's also two-player co-op, which you can play, where someone can join in with you and go through the adventure together. But that's honestly the only thing that really is to the game, like those things. Though worth mentioning also is that also one of the reasons why I even agreed to the game review, because I had to, is that Matt Creamer did the OST to this game. And if you've never heard of this guy, you need to hear of him, because he and Dominic Nenmark, in my opinion, are like the two of the bigger up-and-comers for VGM OSTs. Like, he deserves all the fucking credit, because I haven't heard a bad OST from Matt Creamer yet. His work is great, and that's no different in Slayin' 2. I'd play this game just for that OST. I'm just glad to report that the game is fun, too. I do have one general gripe about the gameplay of Slayin' 2, though I did get used to it. Every once in a while, I still find myself going, screw this, I wish it wasn't. And what that is that it goes back to that bump system I was talking about. In something like Curses and Chaos, you have to press the attack button to perform your attack. And in this game, you just walk into dudes and hurt them. That may seem like a small detail, but when you don't have that tactile feel to press attack, do attack, it starts to make it harder to work the spacing out on fighting certain enemies, especially when the screen starts getting filled with dudes. Some people might say, well, not having the attack button to press means you can focus more on what's happening on the screen, which is true. But by that same token, it makes it such that you can't be like, okay, spacing, there's this giant enemy here. Stop, attack, or just press the button to know you're doing something. So that can result in the occasional second issue, which is that if an enemy takes more than one hit to die, you will bounce off of him, right? Now, earlier I mentioned that one of your spark attacks is an air attack. If you're trying to hit a guy and you want to trigger the standing spark attack, you would press the X button to do it. But what happens if you walked a little too fast, you bumped into the guy to do damage to him as you were about to press the button to the ground spark, but instead now you're in the air because you bumped into him and got bounced back. Now you do the air spark by mistake. And since sometimes that can bounce back and hurt you. Like, I had one attack where it was like a air dash, which would make you want to pierce through the enemy. But since the guy was a boss, I took damage because I didn't clear the entire enemy when I did the air dash. Mm. It kind of sucked. I hated that. Small detail, but it's an issue that I had where I was like, yeah, I wish you could just press the attack button and just see what I'm doing. But with that said, I still found myself enjoying this game quite a bit. It gave me a number of the vibes I was getting from Characters in Chaos, which I freaking perfected by the time I was done playing that bad boy. I get similar vibes from this game with a great OST to boot. I still play this game. I would continue to play this game and hopefully unlock more dudes too, because the game isn't easy. You're going to get your ass beat a lot, which means it's not going to be a matter of just running through the game. But it's worth it because it's fun. You'll get new characters and new stuff to upgrade with your Monet. It's just a good time in a game that I honestly recommend.
Awesome. So for $12, your verdict?
I would buy it.
Buy the shit out of it.
Bye. You know who else would buy this game?
Don't say it, Pernell. Don't say it. We got one final party cast game to talk about. That is called Sega Ages G-Lock Air Battle, developed by M2, published by Sega, released April 30th on the Switch for $7.99. Experience this retro title with Sega Ages Spin. In Ages mode, everything is ramped up. Get more enemies, more missiles, and a more powerful lock-on system. Take a trip back to the past with a moving cabinet display that recreates the arcade experience, including atmospheric arcade sounds in the comfort of your own home. Chris, how is Sega Ages G-Lock Air Battle?
Sega Ages G-Lock Air Battle. Let's see. G-Force-induced loss of consciousness. Air Battle. I had to read that. I had it highlighted, but then I moved away from it accidentally. Whoops.
Proud
Anyways,
of you.
Okay. Yeah, I know. So this is the arcade. Well, this is the console debut of a 30-year-old arcade game, one that came out in 1990 as part of the Sega. What do they call that wave of AM2? Akin to like Super Hang-On or Outrun and Power Drift and like Galaxy Force 2. It's like in that tradition of Sega arcade games. I had thought that this one had come out on the 3DS as part of one of the M2 releases on there, but actually no, it's not where I played it. It last time it came out, I guess, besides on some computers, was the Sega Genesis, which I actually own and have played before. And yeah, the original is way better. Except in one aspect, the Genesis version has a redone soundtrack by Matt Furness, which is amazing. And this one has a good soundtrack. So G-Lock Air Battle is it's an in the cockpit kind of fighter plane game where you basically have a stick and two buttons. So you've got your aiming system, your reticule that you move around, and the moves in this are very extreme. It's like your entire plane tilts, like your whole view tilts every time you turn to do anything, which is of course normal, but not something that's always represented in video games like this. And there's a reason for that, and I'll get to that in a minute. But basically, other planes will fly by or there's stuff on the ground, and your job is to either take them down with your infinite shot machine gun or shoot them down with your heat-seeking missiles, which, of course, I think it's just like A and B, basically. Yeah, B is the machine gun and A is the missiles. And the interesting thing about this game is that the way progress is made is that you don't just fly through levels so much and get to the end of the level. What it is that basically you shoot down enough planes and then you move on. You're actually timed, and the timer is your enemy. So in that sense, it's a little bit like a racing game. It's more about taking down the required amount of planes, which it'll tell you shoot down like 8 planes, right? And as soon as you do that, the faster you do it, the more bonus time is added on to your total countdown. And, it might give you some more missiles and things like that as well. You can run out of missiles, of course, and you can get blown up. But all of that just, resets and you just keep going. Like, the only way that you actually lose the game is running out of time. But of course, since this is an arcade game, you're given the option to continue, and you can just, pop in another quarter and keep going.
Rich definitely kid strats.
Rich kid strats. Except that they have added ages mode, which is, of course, that's a typical thing for the M2 games, at least the ones where they care. No, they always care. But, they always add an ages mode, and it's some augmentation of the game's rules. In this particular instance, they actually remove the continue system. They basically give you, when you play the game at first, you choose from beginner, standard, and, hard, basically. And on medium and hard, you're able to adjust the speed of your plane. It's actually just tilting the right stick is like, pulling on the little lever, or the, what do you call it? The throttle, I guess. Throttle stick, whatever. It used to be a stick on the actual arcade machine. And that will speed you up, and that kind of helps you get through some places. In the beginner's mode difficulty, that's disabled. But in ages mode, it's actually 16 levels of beginner level, beginner level difficulty, but it actually ramps up to something that's, more akin to like the normal or extreme. But it basically is an extra long campaign where it, you can use the throttle, and they give you more missiles and a lot more enemies to fight, so you can get through the stages a little bit quicker. But if you get blown up, then you get, if you run out of time, you run out of time. So then you're done. So that's the kind of thing there. Speaking of M2 and things that they add to the game. So the things that, of course, you get your regular options, such as a variable difficulty level, full-on soundtrack that you can just listen to if you want. Of course, online ranking, full play replay if you want to see how you did in real time. And, you know, all those kind of great, you know, Japanese or international versions. You can get more bonuses or more credits per coin, rather. You can adjust the overall difficulty, you know, things like that. And, you know, the other thing that's really interesting is that display mode, which is usually where you choose whether you want to do like a dot by dot, you know, perfect pixel recreation, or stretch it out a little to fit the screen, or stretch it out widthways because you're a monster. you know, put it in vintage mode, put on scan lines for whatever reason. In that set of options, you have two more. One is called moving seat and the other is called cockpit. And these are recreations of what the game actually looked like in the arcade, including the actual environment. So, for instance, well, moving seat is from the arcade cabinet from back in the day, where when you moved the ship, the whole cockpit moved, you know? It was a full body experience arcade, which is kind of great. And so you see not only is your, you know, screen tilting on the game, but the entire game is like tilting over to the side because it's moving the machine. And of course, that makes it a little harder to see things, but that's the experience. It's actually pretty fun to play that way. And then cockpit mode, which, by the way, forces scan lines because they're like, you're not getting away from the scan lines this thing used to have.
Monsters.
Yes, I know. Well, it's stationary, and you know, but the cool thing about it is that it like has the start button right next to the screen, and when you're able to start, it actually lights up as if you'd put in quarters. When you get hit or when your ship goes into third person mode, which means that an enemy is tracking you and you have to like start dodging them to go back into first person mode. Anytime that happens, these three lights around the screen light up and they're like red lights. So it like it's actually pretty cool. That's really a nice touch.
I love when M2 does stuff like that.
Yeah, I know. They did a great job with that with Super Hang-On back on the 3DS, and they even gave you tilt controls, which, by the way, I would have liked tilt controls in this, but that would have been inaccurate because you always use a joystick in this game. So, yeah, like, it's got all that good stuff in it. Save states, load states. They've got a quick lock-on system, which, of course, changes your ranking type. If you turn it off, you can be ranked in arcade mode. And if you turn it on, you're ranked in freestyle mode. But, basically like a lot of what M2 does, especially when they care and especially when they're handling something that's never been released before. I mean, this is the best way to do it.
Yeah.
It's absolutely like spot on perfect. The game looks great. Of course, it's one of my favorite Sega graphical styles, the one where like it's almost 3D, but only because they just pile in a whole bunch of sprites that load all at once. Like, you know, mountains are just like all these layers of sprites instead of polygons. And yeah, it's just a cool system. And now I'm like super excited to see if they release Galaxy Force 2 next.
Well, I guess we'll find out. But $8 on this one, what's your verdict?
Yeah, $8, absolutely get it. It's a piece of gaming history. It's one of the better Sega shooters out there, I think. I actually prefer it to Afterburner. And this is handled beautifully by people who care. So I say go out there and support it and enjoy a great game for $8.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is it for the PartyCast crew. Thanks, guys, for being here.
You know who else we should thank for being here?
Thank you, Mr. Sinister, for being here and for dropping all them biddies. We do have one more review to take care of, so we're going to jump over to that. Do either of you have any final words before we move on?
Be safe, be smart, be sedentary, take a nap.
All right, and moving on, we've got Jacob Garner joining us. We got a game to talk about, but before then, you have something special, don't you, Jacob?
Yeah, I do. We actually today have our youngest reviewer ever on the show. My oldest son, Sam, is here to help me with the review for Super Toy Cars or Super Toy Racers 2.
What? You are so bad at this job.
I am awful.
Super Toy Cars 2, developed and published by Eclipse Games. It released May 1st on Xbox One for $14.99. Did you know that, Jacob?
I knew it was released. I didn't know the price.
You're bad at this.
It's okay.
So we covered this game on the show last week, but you and Sam wanted to talk about the game. So what are your thoughts on the game?
Well, with Sam, I mean, like, as I've talked about on the show before, I mainly got him into like some of the basic arcade games like Pac-Man and Galaga and stuff like that. But but we also started with Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing. And so this seemed like a good fit for him. And so we played quite a few of the tracks.
Except for the new tracks a lot. Yeah,
but we're talking about the Super Toy Cars 2 game.
Yeah.
Yeah, not Sonic. I mean, if we want to review that another day, we can do that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I mean, Sam's pretty used to basic arcade racing games at this point. So I thought that might be a good fit. And so with this game, I mean, it's like Sam, how do you want to describe it, bud?
It's like I'm pretty good at it, but sometimes I crash into things and then my car gets wrecked.
Yeah, true. Well, I meant like the base of the game. It's kind of like racing Hot Wheels cars in your room, right?
Yeah, I usually do that a lot.
Well, I meant...
point of the game. They wanted to make the game be like in the imagination of a kid playing with Hot Wheels in their room.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, in their room, and like we also played the one in the backyard.
Oh, yeah, I like that one.
Yeah. Both of us kept falling off the table.
And we also kept burning up.
Oh, yeah, on the grill.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought it was pretty interesting. I really enjoyed the level design. Sam, did you like how, like, the different racetracks were set up and stuff like that?
Oh, I kind of liked it on the grill because then, everything was burning for the food.
So you liked that, like, you thought how everything looked and stuff like that, and you thought, like, that was pretty cool?
Yeah, I also think, like, it's kind of weird when you just bump into something and your car gets wrecked.
Yeah, yeah, it's not exactly like that in Sonic.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the times, like, our cars were taking damage, which was a little unexpected at first, but then, you know, then we'd get wrecked, and it was real easy to move, like, we'd be in, like, first or second, and then all of a sudden we'd be in seventh or eighth as all the cars were whizzing by. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, both of us definitely need some more practice on some of those things.
Yeah.
I know Sam was getting a little frustrated with some of the levels, but... Yep. But, you know...
Sam,
I
mean, tell your daddy to get good.
Do you want to say that a little louder?
No.
No? Okay. But I know one of the things that Sam really liked was all the different kind of cars.
Yeah.
That were, you know, that were in the game. Like, Sam, do you remember any of them?
Some of them.
I
only remember two.
Okay. Well, do you remember? All right. But it was like looking through your Hot Wheel.
No, it's like the black one, the black money when the old car.
Right. Sam was a big fan of like one that was like a little roadster kind of thing. But I thought it was really neat because, I mean, it was like going through your Hot Wheels collection and just racing through everything. And I appreciated that they all had different stats on them. It wasn't just like a simple, like, you know, whatever kind of thing. They actually took care into, like, what kind, like, you know, how much damage it could take, how much how good its acceleration was, how fast it could go, all that kind of stuff. It was a wide variety, just like, you know, the average kid's car collection. So I thought that was a nice touch. So... Sam, was there anything you didn't like about the game?
Or, like, somehow, like, when you just hit anything, you just, like, even if you hit a car, that's okay, but if you hit, like, anything that's, like, the walls, or, like, the outside part, or you hit, like one of those fences, you just break out.
Yeah, I was gonna say, that was a tad frustrating because, like, especially in the backyard level, it wasn't always clear. There's another one, I think it was like the tape deck level, where it wasn't always clear where like the where, you know, like the out of bounds was.
Yeah.
And so it was plenty frustrating for Sam and I, like, initially as like we're trying to figure this out and not finish last. with some of the levels, but, you know, I mean, it all made sense. It's just, you know, you have to do a lot of, like, trial and error with it. What's up, bud?
It's also, like, somehow, like, when you just crash into, like, just fences, like, fences can't break your car. Yeah, but that would be kind of, like, Hot Wheels cannot get broken by fences because they're little.
Well, that's true, but, I mean, that's with, like, a regular Hot Wheels car, not, like, in real life.
Yeah.
Or not in a video game, you know.
And I also have my own Hot Wheels that I can build with.
Yeah, that's also true. But yeah, so aside from that, it also, just like the AI, it seemed a little bit tough. And like, I know that the game is, you know, obviously, you know, adults can play it and, you know, there's going to be like a level of nostalgia for us with it. But I mean, like, as I was playing it with Sam, he was definitely getting frustrated by the AI. And you know, with where he was placing it, and a lot of the times he'd be in like next to last or last place.
No, I didn't. I usually get into eighth.
Eighth is last place, buddy.
What?
Yeah. So it happens, bud. But anyway, but yeah, and so it was just like, it was plenty frustrating. I mean, kind of like akin, like, I mean, I don't think I discussed on the show, but Joe, like, you and I had discussed when I initially got Team Sonic Racing for Sam for Christmas, how there was a lot of frustration that, you know, for a game aimed at, like, you figure the main audience is children.
Yeah.
But it's just like the difficulty just gets ramped up so much that it's just like, it's aimed at children, but the AI is not competing on a level that's appropriate for children. You know what I mean?
But I actually beat you on the first one.
What first one?
The first time when we played Team Sonic.
Yeah, there's been a couple of times you beat me on Team Sonic, but
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I beat you more. I beat it not that many times on the normal Sonic.
Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing, that one you beat me less at. Whatever, kid, you're not good at the flying areas, so.
Yeah. But I did get a little bit low in the mommy.
All right, whatever. Keep it up and I'll only play the afterburner level.
Hey!
Anyway, so yeah, I mean, like, I really enjoyed it. I mean, Sam and I are definitely going to have to play it more, you know, so we can get better at the levels and memorize the different racetracks a lot better. But I really enjoyed the customization and just the look of it. I thought it was fantastic. I mean, Sam, did you like it too?
I like more of the cars look when you can change the paint a lot.
Yeah, you really like the customization?
How you can, like, change the paint.
The color, yeah. Yeah. Okay. I mean, do you want to keep playing Super Toy Cars too?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, because I kind of like how you...
That is a glowing review if I ever heard it.
I kind of like the ones that have backs on them, on the back of the car like this.
Oh, wow, I'm blanking on that. Joe, do you know what part of the...
The spoiler.
Thank you, I was going to call it a foil. Yeah, the spoiler. All right, so you like the cars with spoiler? You like the fact that there's lots of cars with spoilers in it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, sure, why not? And it's got cars with spoilers. Hopefully, if there's ever a retail release, I hope that those get quoted on the box.
I hope so, too. So, right, any final words?
No.
Nothing?
No.
No, you don't have anything else you want to say about the game?
No.
Okay. All right. Then, yeah, I think that's it. I recommend it. Sam, would you recommend other people to check it out?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's 2-for-2 on that.
All right. Well, we have one final game to talk about. And while you switch from speakerphone over to regular handset, I'm going to go through the details. Final game to talk about is called Hue, developed by Fiddlesticks Games, published by Curve Digital and Badland Publishing. Released April 23rd on iOS and Android, is a free-to-play trial with a full game unlock for $4.99. Turn a gray world into a colorful blast as you guide Hue on his journey to solve his mother's disappearance. Collect the clues she left behind in an exciting, action-packed, puzzle-solving platform adventure. Jacob, tell us about Hue.
Well, I mean, it's pretty much just as you described it, so...
Helpful.
It's Well, I mean, like, that saves us lots of time, really. All right, so pretty much, it's as you described, it's a puzzle platformer. You know, at this, I didn't realize it until after you had given me the game, but, like, I didn't know that the game had been around for a few years now.
Mm-hmm. We covered whatever. It when it first launched on Xbox a couple of years ago.
In 2016. That's not a couple of years ago, man.
Shut up. Yes, it is.
Seems like an eternity ago.
It was forever ago.
So anyway, so I would liken some of the puzzles to, like, along the lines of, like, stuff from Limbo, from way back in the day. But, so pretty much what it is that you're just going through the world solving puzzles. And you eventually will run into, these parts of a puzzle or a color wheel. And, you start solving puzzles that way because, like, let's say that there is a blue block, blocking your way. Well, if you make your entire world blue, then all of a sudden that block goes away and then you can, like, proceed to the next thing. Or you have to switch it over to, like, a different color, and then all of a sudden, like, blocks of a different color show up, and then, like, you're able to stack a bunch of stuff and then, you know, keep going forward. And so a lot of these puzzle solutions are fairly easy. I mean, like, there's some stuff that's physics-based, but I didn't find it too much. There weren't too many of them. A lot of them were... just as I said, you know, it's color and making sure, like, you have the right one and you're placing, if you have to move a block, you're putting in the right position. It's fairly simple stuff. You know, it's nothing you're going to rack your brain over, but at the same time, it was a pretty satisfying game. I honestly enjoyed it. Like, it wasn't earth shattering, but it was fun for what it was.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it when I played it on the Xbox One. Fun fact, I was the first person to get the completion on that game on True Achievements.
Really?
Yeah, no. I was the first guy. That's my one game that I was first on. But how does the game play on phone? How does it control?
So I didn't get to find out about a Game Vice controller thing on that.
You did.
Well, we still can't find it.
You dick.
So, interestingly enough, going back to the gameplay, like, I didn't really have any issues with, like, any of the puzzles or, like, you know, any of the times, like, I died because of mechanics in the game. They never felt like, oh, this is bullshit, like, this game's broken and stuff like that. However... like, you do have, like, a small button to jump, or, like, choose your puzzle or choose from your color wheel. And then there's also, like, a smaller button that will pop up if you have to, like, pull a block. And I found myself dying a couple of times just because, like, as you're pulling something, like, time slows down and it would just get really hinky. And if I was trying to jump something, it would misread it as me trying to pull something. So I ended up dying quite a few times because of, like, the placement of the jump and the pull buttons, like, how close they are together. Mm. So, word of warning, if you're like Joe and I with sausage fingers, then you may have some issues with it, but it's just one of those things that you know, you just deal with and you keep moving on. It wasn't a game, like, it wasn't a game breaker for me, like, yeah. If that's what you're asking.
And as you mentioned, no ability to test the Game Vice. How did you lose it, really?
We moved.
Oh, God.
It's as simple as that. We moved, and we haven't found it yet.
I'm so proud of you. I'm so glad that we got that for the show. For you to fucking lose. You son of a bitch.
I'm sure it's not, like, lost. Like,
well, you're not getting another one.
Well, yeah.
I mean, so, nah.
Well, I mean, do they make them for iPhone? Like, I mean, because I didn't have the same iPhone as I did then. I mean, I have an iPhone 8, so I don't even know if that thing works with an iPhone 8. I would assume it does. Yeah, I don't know. For all we know,
you're the one who lost the fucking thing. How would I know?
Well, I'm just saying, for all we know, it could be incompatible anyway. And then you'd just be angry at me for nothing.
You're the worst. Okay, so $5 on Hue to unlock it. What do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, first off, there's far worse things you could blow $5 on the iTunes store. But honestly, this is a good diversion for a good 5-6 hours of gameplay. I liked it. I don't know if I'd really say that it has a lot of replay value, but for $5, I enjoy it for what it is. I would recommend it.
Cool. Good stuff.
Yep.
So, you got anything else to talk about, or?
I don't know. Have you played Streets of Rage 4 yet?
I have not. Have you?
Yeah, I've cleared 75% of the levels so far, or the stages.
How is it?
So far. Honestly, it's a heavy contender for Game of the Year for me. So far, my favorites that I've played thus far this year are Avicii and Vector, Doom Eternal, and Streets of Rage 4. And right now, Streets of Rage 4 is my favorite.
No.
It's just, honestly, I think it's great. It feels right. The gameplay is great. I'm reading people online are like, oh, you can't run. And I'm just like, okay, you couldn't in the other ones. Whatever. I think the soundtrack is fantastic. Every level just felt right. And I like the different music for the boss fights and stuff like that. The gameplay's tight. The graphics look fantastic. As I said, the soundtrack's amazing. It's $10 up on iTunes right now.
Nice.
Also,
the soundtrack, by the way, not the game.
Yes. Yeah. And also, by the way, you can get the soundtracks to Streets of Rage 1 through 3 for $5.99 each, also up on iTunes. I discovered that as well. So I just have the whole series now of its music.
Nice. We just got our second Streets of Rage review on the show, I guess.
Wait, what? Oh, no. Wait.
What?
Could we have... Wait, who got to review it?
Tim.
Oh, damn it. Okay. Well, shoot. I could do a far more nuanced one later on if you want me to.
No, I think 2 is good. we did the review already. It was earlier this episode, so.
I didn't think that what I was talking about counted as a review.
It was close enough.
Oh, has Tim, warmed up to it at all? Or do I have to listen and find out?
You're going to have to listen and find out. Otherwise, you're exposing the fact that I record the show out of order, so you can shut the fuck up with this line of questioning.
Joe, I'm pretty sure our listeners, all three of them, know that by now.
Hey, are you a Cowboy Bebop fan?
Yeah, why?
Did you know that there was a tribute to the Real Folk Blues that includes over 40 guests across the video game industry?
No.
Well, composer Mason Lieberman, in conjunction with Sunrise and Funimation, is pleased to present the musical collaboration between the video game and anime industries to support Doctors Without Borders and the CDC foundations.
Wait, is this you getting me to shut the hell up?
Well, it's me just giving info on the music that I'm playing on the show tonight.
Oh, but also getting me to shut the hell up.
Yeah, that too.
Oh, okay. I mean, that's fair. How much does it cost, Joe?
It's $1 on Bandcamp.
Whoa, shit. Seriously?
Yeah.
Damn. Okay. Is it available anywhere else, or is it just Bandcamp?
Right now, it's available on Bandcamp, or you can pre-order... Let me go through the info. They have a vinyl version that's going to be released on Crates, Q-R-A-T-E-S... is available for $25 plus whatever shipping and handling is going to be required on their end. And then it's supposed to be hitting Spotify, iTunes, and Amazon Music on May 8th.
Okay, cool. I will definitely be picking it up on iTunes then.
Yeah,
that's
buddy.
That's really how I've been dealing with all my music.
Yeah, I'm the same way. The 1UPs just put out a new album as well.
Oh,
and by new album, I mean it's 10 songs that they've already released on various productions. It's a B-sides album.
You're a B-sides album.
No, B, not bead.
No, no, I said B-side. You know what? Shut up.
I thought you said I was bead-sized. Like, no, I'm a little bit bigger than a bead.
Yeah, you're definitely I'm a not dollop. Bead-sized. Like, the only thing that's bead-sized about you is maybe your balls.
No, those are huge.
I
fucking massive. So yeah, check out that song. The link will be in the description.
I'm sure our, you know, all the like the developers who are not used to this really appreciate, you know, our conversation. Hey, so this video game also, let's talk about Joe's balls for a minute now.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah.
してたと嘆くにはあまりにも時は過ぎてしまった。まだ心のほころびを癒せぬまま風が吹いてる。 一つのみで 明日を見て一つの出来の見つめてる君の愛のゆりかごでもう一度ゆすらかに眠れたら乾いた瞳で誰か泣いて。
Get the drop on bad guys. Don't be surprised when your fate rests on a fingertip. Time stops. Love is lost. Pack your grip and join my ship, the Bebop.
It's a hard, cold world, but even colder without you. Looking for kind eyes at every single encounter. Cutting through hard stairs, got my hope from the doubters. Memories start to fade, sweet dreams begin to sour. Wind smothers my window, flame hard to rekindle. World crumble around me, begging God for a signal. Life is never that simple, lies dismantle temples. That pain that left me crippled, refined me like a chisel. You find me in the middle of war and peace. Just trying to ease my mental, exploring beats. Real rhymes for real time, sweetest gift like Sade. And my name mean it's a classic like Watanabe. Never that hard to find me. A rider for the people, do or die. Suitless side, born to rise above the evil. Walk through fire if I need to get the higher ground. I am down for the fight of my life to the final
this
round.
This is for my real folks who never wanted to deal dope. Seen the world at its darkest and bleakest and still hope. Know that kindness ain't no weakness, just a sign of our uniqueness. Hard as you work to get it, that's how hard you work to keep it. Not a secret, I just rap to offset my setbacks. Trying to get the bounty like I'm Jet Black, so respect that. Qualifying like a Mike Eagle, rapping for my people. Leave the mic smoking like I'm Spike Spiegel. They say business and pleasure, it don't mix. But when I'm with my real folks, there ain't no need to code switch. When I'm feeling hopeless, my folks keep me focused. Fade with the Austria 45, we don't miss. But my heart, it gets torn in two when I see what this world is now morphed into. But no matter what, we gon' get through. Kicking off the blues and taking off like the swordfish too.
I'm not a saint or a sinner. My days are my winners. My dreams are my picture. My breakfast is dinner. My gun is my mirror. My friends are my villains. I come from the village where love is your killer. Where love gets you killed if you know when you feel it. Your loss is a vicious. Turn all my shooting stars to an asteroid. You use your eyes too much. I flow with no focal point. You overthink almost every choice and you die quick. You never risk what you got and you never find shit. Never do what I'm told. Bravery isn't bold. People die who are right about everything that they know, but their finger was slow. Do what you're sold. I go where I go. Whatever happens, happens. I see when I do the past and I keep on back in the present. I used to back in the end and now I'm asking the questions. Grasping my weapon on top of my exit. I kill me the dragon. I'm back on the steps of the gate. They waiting for me. Let me carry the weight. Bang.
See you, space cowboy.